So I was really gripped by the big match at the weekend.
Oh, unbelievable. And may I say, one of the happiest days of my year so far. Yeah, incredible.
What do you mean happy? We lost. England, New Zealand, we lost.
Oh, was there a rugby game? I thought you were talking about AFC Wimbledon versus MK. 2-0. We put them out the cup. It's like Christmas, birthday, New Year, all coming at once.
Yeah, silly me. I forgot that one. Welcome, everyone, to episode 307. Oh, did you want that with more life this time, by the way?
Can I just check
before you interrupt? Can I just say, what do you want?
I'm going to interrupt. Yes, come on. Deliver it with a bit of passion.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to episode 307 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. This is about as passionate as I get, all right? My name's Nick Page. And there is Joe Davis.
Hello.
Hello. Actually, I do get more passionate, and I did get more passionate at the rugby match. And I may have used the terms to my wife, this is why I hate sport, when we didn't win it in the last minute. And we had the opportunity.
That'd be it.
I'm glad you had such a good weekend with your team. That was good.
It was beautiful. Yeah, it really was good.
So, church notices, my friend?
Oh, well, church notices. Yeah, a couple. There's a huge buzz of excitement about the home group. Let me just say, I'm so glad you announced that a few weeks back because it's getting to be the pitch.
Do you know what? The thing about a buzz is it's quite annoying, isn't it, really? It's quite irritating. I've got buzzes in my ears. I don't like them.
I wonder whether we've been hacked or Ethel's been hacked. We had this.
Oh, really?
We had an email in from someone purporting to be Ethel's sad old person, and certainly it sounded like her. It's a dear Reverend and Mrs. Davis, and she talked about our 8-year anniversary, 8 years of heresy, and she used the term auditory abomination, which I quite enjoyed. And she said, I pray you'll use this anniversary as an opportunity to turn from your wicked ways and dedicate your lives to the pursuit of true holiness. I remain, as always, yours with mixed blessings, Ethel Sad Old Person. This is, I don't know what's going on there. Is this AI? What's going on?
Well, I think, and I'm not prepared to divulge my sources, but I can confirm it wasn't from Ethel.
Well,
I'm not prepared to tell you how I know that, but I do know that. So I think Ethel's been hacked, really.
It's an alarming development.
So anyway, how are you? Because we've got quite a bit of catching up to do because, of course, last week was just the interview. So lots have been happening.
What can I say? It's been cloudy and grey for a week. I haven't seen the sun.
It is November.
I know, but we still normally have incredible sunsets here in November. There's been elections and things. The pier is still closed. You know, I've got a long gratitude list. However, I did go into battle on Saturday. You'll be glad to hear.
Right. With whom?
With myself.
Ah, an English place name pun. I see.
Yes. Yeah. I've never been to Battle, I don't think. It's a lovely place. Yeah. East Sussex. I highly recommend.
Is it actually where the battle took place, though? Because I'm not sure it is. I think it might be one of those ones where they confidently named it and then actually archaeologists have suggested it was a bit further away or something.
I don't think it was actually in the coffee shop where I was, but it was certainly nearby. I mean, that's where they served coffee, I imagine.
Yeah, fair enough. We should point out that for some of our listeners who might be historically challenged, this is the supposed site of where William the Conqueror, or William the Bastard, as he was known. actually, he was known as that. That wasn't even... historically, that was his chosen name. Landed with his troops to invade England in 1066. I don't know if they went to the coffee shop, but...
Oh, I'd imagine they would have done. After that journey, you need something.
You've just come off the ferry. You've just slaughtered the English army. You want a latte or something, don't you?
Of course you do, yeah.
Frappuccino.
Oh, we should have done a history podcast together, shouldn't we?
I would love that.
Yeah, you would. We're celebrating our daughter's birthday today. So happy birthday, Sophie, although it'll be 2 days ago when this comes out. And, last night I went to see Heretic.
Right.
What a heartwarming and lovely movie that is, starring Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant of Notting Hill and Bridget Jones' Diary. Hugh Grant in a lovely role as a particularly vicious man.
Oh, okay.
But the film is actually quite an interesting premise, and it's a sort of commentary on religion and control. Ticks all those kind of boxes. But if you don't like gruesome, do not under any circumstances go and see this film, would be my tip there. But if you if you don't mind a bit of gruesomeness in with your theological ponderings, you'd certainly enjoy it.
Okay. I think that's a fairly strong pass from me then. I'll just re-watch Paddington 2, I think.
Yeah, that's such a great idea. Yeah. Anyway, how are you, my friend?
Well, here's the thing. So talking of your lovely daughter, she sent me a lovely video the other day. Yeah, she had a lovely text message with a video with an old church she's been in Honey Church in Devon. And she really loved it. And she was pointing out all the box pews and the paintings on the wall and the candle holders and the Norman font and all kinds of... Yeah, it's great. So I love the fact that your family is going into old churches and sending me messages about it. I love this.
You have ruined us. Thank you.
It was absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Sophie, for that. What else has happened? Oh, I had my MRI. I talked about that a bit last week. Yeah. Just strange. Just a strange experience. Here's the thing. You have to lie still, right? Have you had one?
No, of course not.
Right, okay. No,
very healthy person.
No, I just would have thought they would have been looking for a brain at some point. But no, you lie still. So you have this sort of cradle around your head and then you have a mask kind of thing clamped over you. And you think, oh, how difficult can it be to lie still for 45 minutes? Very difficult, actually, is the answer. You know, because you never really lie totally still, do you? You're always kind of able to move and you've got freedom.
Yeah.
And so it was a strange experience and hopefully not one that I need to do again. But thanks to the NHS, who were pretty great about it, so that was good. Had my quiet day last week.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to talk about that in a future episode a bit, actually, because there's a bit to process out of that, but that was nice. Talking of churches as well, which as we were and we need to a lot more on this podcast, I also had a lovely moment I went to London last week to meet my publisher to see if we could resurrect what I laughingly call my career, the shreds of it, and I, on the way, I popped into a church called St. Bartholomew the Great.
Of course you did.
It's in Smithfield.
That's a modest name, isn't it? I think I call this St. Bartholomew the Great.
Well, it's because it was part of the big monastery, and so it was probably the bigger of two churches called St. Bartholomew, I'm guessing.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it's one of the few city churches to survive the Great Fire. Wonderful Norman church, Norman arches and architecture, fantastic. But best of all, when I went in there, there was a trio playing classical music. They were rehearsing for a performance.
Okay.
And it was absolutely stunning. It was one of those moments
that would
you
be
know,
good, yeah.
You're awash in beauty and unexpected beauty.
Numinous moments.
High neums.
High
very
neums.
High neums.
No, I get
yeah,
that.
I would
good.
Really give it 4, I think. It was fantastic.
Okay. Great.
So that was just a lovely gift. Yeah, and that's about it, really.
Okay, fair play.
And the other thing, finally, I know there's a lot of news, but we didn't do it last week. I think I preached on Sunday, and Sunday was All Saints Day.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Which is a bit of an odd festival because it really means everybody. You know, saints in the gospel terms are every believer, really.
Okay.
But I suppose nowadays we tend to think of them as you know, particular sort of holy, virtuous people. But I did this little exercise where I asked people to say, if you were a saint, what would you be patron saint of? Just really fun to do, because some people said, you know, cowboy boots. One person said, I'd be patron saint of books that are bought but not read. You know, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah.
But I wondered, you know, if you were Saint Joe, well, you are Saint Joe because we're all saints, but you Saint Joe.
Saint Joe the Great, I believe.
Saint Joe the Great, yeah, as in grating, really. But anyway, what would you be patron saint of? That's my
cheese,
question.
Cheese, obviously.
patron saint of cheese.
Could it be anything else?
Any particular cheese, though? Really hard cheese?
Yeah, hard
than...
cheese. And I wouldn't say British cheese, I think. I wouldn't like to, you know, sort of be thought of as an expert in French cheese or other stuff. So, yeah, British cheese, I think. Yeah.
St. Joe of Wensleydale.
Yes, exactly. How about you? What would you be saint of?
Well, I think there's only one thing. I think I am Saint Nick, patron saint of innuendo. I really think that is. Yeah. If you are looking for an innuendo, just, you know, pray in my name.
Exactly. If anyone prayed to you for an innuendo, you'd certainly give them one.
Oh, dear. And that is what makes this podcast great. Anyway, let's move on.
Yes, let's do some feedback. However, before we really get going on the feedback, Martin did write in and questioned if I knew anything about the 22 tons of high value cheddar that was stolen. Which I sort of
didn't read that story.
You didn't hear that? Did you not?
No.
Hear that? Oh yeah, 22 tons of high value cheddar was stolen from London. Yeah.
Really?
Shocking. Shocking.
Is that stolen as in eaten?
No, not eaten.
One way of getting rid of the evidence, isn't it?
Anyway, we've had this nice... Speaking of New Zealand, we had...
Were we?
Well, I believe we were at some point. And yes, and we had this in from Sarah from New Zealand, who says, Kia ora from Aotearoa. I don't think I've said it right. But anyway, Kia ora. And anyway, she loved the discussion about walking as the most underrated spiritual discipline. And sent a lovely email saying that, you know, she has ADHD and has struggled with prayer for so many years before discovering praying and walking. So thank you for that. That's
nice.
Yeah, it's good. Thanks so much there. And then Ken wrote to us regarding the whole home group thing. And then he said, 3 years ago, I asked you to broadcast a message from me to any mid-faith listeners in the South Manchester area interested in getting together to discuss mid-faith matters, in effect, a home group. As a result, in September of 2021, a small group drawn from several evangelical churches and none came together. Since then, 10 to 12 of us have gathered monthly to consider issues raised by the podcast and other faith-related stuff we struggle with. Most of the other small home group experiences I've had over the years have tended to be predictable and safe, uniting around an assumed understanding of the Bible and somehow shutting down divergent views or expressions of doubt. Conversely, I have found our mid-faith group to be life-giving, freeing, shockingly honest, irreverent, hilarious, profound and unmissable. In short, it's by far the best home group I've been a part of. Mm. So let me encourage you, despite Nick's misgivings, to crack on with your plan. I suspect very few of us in evangelical churches who have in any way questioned or deconstructed elements of our faith will have found the space and willingness to engage in honest and helpful faith conversations, whether with leaders or peers. Yet I believe this to be essential in supporting people transitioning to the next stage of faith on their journey. Groups like ours, and hopefully what you have in mind, serve to fill this gap and maybe enable the church to become what it needs to be in this time. Every blessing to you both as you help the 17 to shuffle forward in faith. And that's from Ken, Rev Ken.
Oh, thanks, Ken. That's really nice to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, that's lovely. Encouraging.
I'm glad that's going so well. Obviously, I don't want any kind of divergent opinion to be expressed if we do a home group ourselves. I'm viewing it more as a platform for my views.
For your views, yes.
Yeah.
Of course you are.
What's the point of doing it otherwise? Yeah. No, that is great. And it's so good, I think, to be part of a community where you can be, you know... What did he say? Shockingly honest.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I think that's so necessary. And that's always a difficulty with home groups, isn't it? Because they're part of the structure. Is how far can they diverge? I think when they work well, they work brilliantly. I think they're really important.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes they can be a bit, of a sort of echo chamber, I guess.
Well, let's move on. Philip sent in a lovely email. This is very much an edited story, but he wrote in, well, the lovely sad story, his dear wife Rosie really suffered with long COVID. And he told us the story of then going and speaking at Oasis Church in Bath and how afterwards Rosie met this lovely woman with whom she got on extremely well. And so he says after the service, this lady asked Rosie if they could pray for her. Rosie was slightly surprised, but agreed. The lady prayed in a very assertive, charismatic ways to banish the spirit of COVID, for Rosie to be released from the oppressive power of COVID spirits and to be set free to fulfil her place and calling in the church. And he says, after the service, we took Rosie in the wheelchair to a fantastic restaurant for lunch, went back to the car, travelled home to Oxford, blah, blah. The long shot is She is driving again. She has to wait for me now whenever we go for a walk, which we do almost every day. My subjective assessment of Rose's health is that it has virtually overnight improved from about 20% healthy to 85% healthy.
Wow.
Besides this, Rosie has had a very short notice cataract operation and her sight is now spectacularly restored. So within 2 weeks of being prayed for, Rosie was and is still fit and healthy with no eyesight problems. So what happened? Rosie talks about her trinity of healing. One, a rewilded gut. That's interesting. Two, plenty of sea air. And three, prayer. Plus, of course, the wonderful staff of the NHS. Does the divine intervene when we or someone prays? He says, I don't know, but this certainly makes us think. That's great, isn't
it? Brilliant. I'm so happy for you. Now, I think, you know, that's the whole thing in a nutshell, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is the answer to prayer there? Well, it's all of it. And, and you know, what bit was intervention? You can't really work that out, but something happened.
Yeah.
So I think that's really what I've been stumbling towards trying to say in the last few weeks about it, really, that one shouldn't shut out the possibilities, that it's a sort of a mixture of all kinds of things happening in your life that that might be seen as an answer or even, dare I say, an intervention.
Yes. I'm starting to wonder whether the talk of, you know, is there an interventionist God or non-interventionist God? I wonder if that's just a bit too binary.
I agree.
Be helpful. It's again, it's like we often say about labels. They're helpful, but sometimes they trip us up. And just having that binary thing doesn't somehow seem to get it. Anyway, a couple more on this. Rachel wrote and says, hi, Jonah. And she wrote me some nice words about the podcast, which you have obviously edited out. And then she says, parking spaces. On the way to the cathedral for an event, we were stopped in the car park by a lady wanting to know the way. We had noticed her on the way in, getting into a right pickle with the entrance. We invited her to walk with us, and as she left her car, the elaborate checking routine suggested that she was highly anxious. On the way, she and my daughter realised they had mutual acquaintances and chatted. It struck me that if she had been the kind of anxious person who prayed about being able to park and find her way, that we might just have been the answer to her prayer. That was a nice thought, despite my theology suggesting that it was all just coincidence. Thirdly, experiencing the supernatural, even if you don't believe a word of it. It says, a few years ago, our elderly cat died. I know it's just a cat, but it's never just a cat, okay? We were all pretty upset, especially my then teenage son. I'd been aware of people I knew finding a feather after someone had died and taking it as a sign that that dead person was telling them they were all right, but had always regarded this as total nonsense. As I was tidying, shortly after losing the cat, I found a small white feather. Despite it being nonsense, it made me smile. I gave it to my son with a very garbled explanation about it being nonsense, but that I hoped it made him smile too. It did. Either the feather or my intellectual discomfort. Anyway, maybe and she says this, maybe we sometimes overthink nice things that happen and make us smile when we need a smile. It doesn't mean we have to have a theology for them any more than we need a reason why bad things happen, because that usually turns out to be sin or not praying hard enough. And I think most of us have struggled with that thought at one time or another. Best wishes, Rachel. So that's a nice story, isn't it? And I don't know. Do we overthink things? That's the question.
I like the idea of just viewing certain things as a gift.
Yeah.
Not overweighting them with meaning or significance, but just seeing them as a possible gift. And also sort of having that two things in your head that you might be reading more into this than is there. But does it matter if what you're reading is helpful and good, if it's fruitful for you? So I think that's nice. You know, we are built as human beings to see meaning, to seek it out, to seek patterns and make sense out of life. That's one of our great superpowers, in fact.
Yes.
And so I don't think it's always sort of wrong to do that. It's probably wrong to sort of build massive theologies on it, you know, and to sell books about the magic feather or whatever. That might be wrong. But, you know, I think to just see it as a sort of light bit of comfort for yourself, I think that's really not bad at all. And I did like the first bit about how, you know, seeing yourself sometimes as the answer to other people's prayers. I thought that was really
nice. That was good. And I also liked it because she said, you know, I used to poo-poo this sort of thing, like it's just a load of rubbish. But I do think a sign of moving through the stages of faith is coming back to a sort of simple acceptance. I remember when My brother died. Patty, you know, the following day, the birds, which had never done this before, came into the house and was just hopping around. And it didn't bother her at all. She absolutely loved it. And she thought it was a real sign because it was a bird that Brian particularly liked. And, you know, once upon a time in my at my evangelical zenith, I think I would have said, well, that's not, you know. I just said, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that beautiful? Yeah, yeah, you know, maybe. Who knows? She saw it as Brian telling her she's all right, you know. And I think, well, who am I to tell her that's not that? You know.
Exactly. Is it a mystical occurrence?
Yeah.
Or is it a coincidence? Well, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
It's both.
Right.
Why
right.
not? Why isn't it both? I think that's great.
On the flip side, let me read this one from Mark. He says, hi, Joni. Okay. He says, I recently took our two-year-old to her favourite play place. I arrive and the car park is full. I search neighbouring streets and find no spaces. Thinking about the discussion previously on the podcast, I decided to pray and go back. Well done, Mark. Yes, there are now three parking spaces. I get the two-year-old out of the car and walk to the door, writing my own theology on praying for parking. I say two to play, please, and I'm greeted with, sorry, we're full. So I walk back to the car, binning my theology, thinking next time I won't forget to pray for the thing I need the parking for because I have a very unhappy two-year-old. Regards, Mark.
Well, look, Mark, what can we say? The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. That's what we say.
Blessed be the Lord.
Indeed.
Anyway, thanks for that, Mark. Appreciated that. Okay, let's just do one more. I must say, we've had some brilliant, brilliant emails in. Thanks so much for this, folks. Keep them coming. We're going to come back to some of the more lengthier ones next week. I say lengthy. We'll edit them all down. But you know what I mean. We'll discuss them next week. But so let's finish with this one from Gary. He said, I really found the episode about the microphone in the heart so engaging. So this was something you were saying last week, wasn't it, Nick?
Yeah.
It was from a preacher.
A preacher talking about hearing God, talking about this the microphone in the heart, you know.
Yeah, that was wonderful. So the guy said, after 10 plus years in this mid-faith crisis, I'm still healing from the attitude that I need to get my worldview completely sorted with finality. In short, to have the right view, in inverted commas, of God as a being or nature or what. It's so nice to hear you both speculating and changing without necessarily agreeing. It helps me understand that I can be more playful and just ask questions instead of being able to give answers. To answer from the deep resources of the theology of I don't know. I can relax and co-create in each present moment with the choices available, guided by the microphone in my heart to recognise beauty and grace and to seek to increase those things in the world. He says, I don't call myself Christian anymore, at least not the kind of Christian most popular in the United States these days. If I follow a theology of I don't know, does that make me an agnostic? Or am I just still healing from the part of me that needs to label everyone and everything? I have so many thoughts from your rich conversation, but really tried to keep it short. Bless you. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, what a great email. Thank you.
Labels. I mean, they're so tricky, aren't they? You know, and I was just thinking as you were reading that the whole label of Christian and what does it mean? I don't know where you're at with it at the moment in terms of that word. I know we've talked about it before.
Yeah.
Do you call yourself a Christian? Do you call yourself a follower of Jesus? Do you call yourself a worshipper of the seagull deity? I don't know which.
Obviously. I think, again, I think it depends on who I'm talking to. I think I can't always get this right, can you? But I think if you're talking to someone who you sense has a view that Christian means, you know, kind of narrow-minded, homophobic, you know, right-wing, whatever, I tend not to say I'm a Christian in that context. You know, I would use something that sounds a bit more religious, if anything. I'd say something like, I'm trying to follow Jesus with my, you know, I think Jesus is very wise like that. So, but, you know, nothing is particularly satisfying. But I completely agree with this. Why try to label it? Really, isn't it for other people to label? I don't think I need.
Well, you've got a label. You've got to have some labels, otherwise you don't know what you're dealing with. You know, you don't know how to identify anything.
Yeah.
I feel about it these days. I feel quite annoyed in a way. Unusually for me.
Yes, I can't imagine you getting grumpy over something.
Well, only because, you know, the word Christian has such a long and rich and heritage.
Yeah.
And also has been, you know, obviously abused as well. I mean, it's always had that in there. But there's a song by a band called Show of Hands, and the song is called Roots, and it's about sort of English folk music. Why don't we make more of it? But there's a line in there which says, I think it goes something like, "I've lost St. George and the Union Jack. It's my flag too, and I want it back." Which means, you know, that it's been co-opted by a certain, in the UK, by a certain sort of political
world. Yeah, kind of neo-Nazis type. Yeah.
Well, you know, a bit like that, or just sort of right-wing, or just sort of very ultra-patriotic or whatever. And it should be something that brings us all together. And I feel the same about Christianity, about the word Christian. It's my word too, and I want it back. You know, I don't necessarily want to cede it to people who I think aren't actually necessarily being very Jesus-like at times. So who am I to judge? But it seems that way to me. So I think that there's a... it ties in maybe a little bit with what's happening in the world today as we see more sort of populist movements growing. And you know, obviously we've had the events of a couple of days ago and the election and everything like that.
Mm.
And there's a lot of apprehension, a lot of division, a lot of people fearful. But I think there is stuff we can do. And one of the things that we can do is live more intentionally and more authentically to the values that we hold. You know, and claim that word back.
Okay. That's a really interesting thought, because I mean, it's like me substituting God for divine, because I sense that God has so much baggage with it. So if someone says, "Do you believe in God?" I will always answer, "What do you mean by God?" And then I'll tell you if I believe in God or not.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The trouble is, if you just let the labels go, you lose so much, I think.
Okay, right.
You lose both the good and the bad. So you lose ways of communicating with people that would actually help you because you've introduced another term or you've done it a different way, I think. But I think the other thing is about this sort of living intentionally, because I was talking to a group of people yesterday about it, and they were very down and disappointed and anxious and fearful about a whole host of things. And I think, you know, the certainly younger generations, they have so much to be anxious about. State of the planet, state of the world, all the wars going on, you know, the division, the divisive politics, all this stuff. And I was talking to them about making an intentional choice to reclaim the word joy.
That's interesting.
To embody it. To sort of choose joy. I'm more or less talking to myself, to be honest.
Of course,
Often the case, normally in reality as well, because they've all phased out. But anyway, you know, but I don't want that to sound cheesy or escapist. I'm viewing joy these days as a revolutionary act.
Right.
As an act of insubordination.
Great.
You know, in fact, I was when I was speaking, I said, you know, it's choosing joy means sticking two fingers up to the forces of darkness.
Love it.
Which is not technically the kind of religious language they might have been expecting, but I felt it was worth doing.
I love that. You know, stick two fingers up to the forces of darkness. Please say that's the title of the episode.
Well, you know, I just think there's something actually about laughter, good laughter, not honest laughter, you know, not cruel laughter, because that can be misused. But there's something about laughter and joy that is always revolutionary, I think. Because one of the things I think the powers want you to be, whether we talk about principalities and powers or political powers or whatever, they want you to be scared. That's the whole point. They want you to take them seriously. They want you to be scared of them.
Yeah.
To view them as more than just human.
Right.
And what laughter does is it restores humanity, and it says, no, they're just idiots like the rest of us. You know, this is why dictators have always hated being laughed at.
Right.
They can't bear it, because that shatters their whole mystique. And so I think one of the things we can do in these times is choose joy. Mm. Look for joy. Look for the things that bring us joy. Try and bring joy to other people. Seek out the good things, celebrate the good things, and change all those little things, change the things we can change, you know. if we want to change the word Christian or the perception of the word Christian, it starts with us doing something differently, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't start with us saying, oh, we're not all like that. You've got to prove you're not like that.
I really like it. And I wonder what that means. I mean, I know we don't really want to get into the Trump thing and, you know, for good reason, I think. And, you know, we don't want to give too much airtime to it. But if there is a whole group of people who are absolutely celebrating their heads off and going crazy around you, and you are feeling really upset and depressed for the same reason that they are rejoicing, you've got a number of options into how you now react. You can go straight to your social media, to your Facebook page, and you can air all your grievance, can't you? You can just talk about, you know, how stupid the other side is, or, you know, whatever, and you can air it all out. That's an option that is open to you, and that's certainly an option I've seen many taking. But it seems to me what you're getting at is something very different to that, radically different. Like you're cheering, you know, my side have lost, your side has won. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to choose to live differently, and well, and, you know, God bless you kind of thing. You know, like it's that intentional putting on of something that is not going to drag you down into this kind of angry fury that keeps the divides going, but something that actually could bring unity to us, stop the divisiveness, which would be a great response.
Yeah, I mean, and actually, probably the only real response that you can do that's going to make a difference. Another scream into the void isn't going to make any difference to anybody. And most of what happens in the world, we can't affect. You know, we can't change that. So, but what we can do is make a cake for somebody.
Yeah.
Or you know, or just sit and listen to them. Or, like you said the other week, phone somebody, pray about it, and see if the microphone in your heart lights up and there's a name that you think, oh, I should phone that person. You know, there's loads that we can do that is much more positive. And I think, again, you can view it as escapism if you want. You can say, oh, look at you, Nick, you're just ignoring what's going on in the world. I don't think I am. I think I'm refusing to play their game.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't see why I should play their game of divisiveness and hatred. Why should I do that?
Yeah.
Why should I care about it? Why should I this amazing thing I found the other day, okay, on the other morning, you know, because the news was full of everything that was happening. Yeah. And I turned the radio over to Radio 3. And Radio 3, for those of you who don't know, is a classical station. It's very old-fashioned in a way, BBC classical music. So there's this beautiful music coming out. And here's one of the great things about Radio 3 is they do the news twice in the morning, one briefly at 8:30 and then at 1 o'clock.
Is that
and
right?
That's it. They don't bother with it in between. You know, because Radio 3 listeners, they've only just getting over the death of Mozart. You know, they haven't got space for all this other stuff.
Oh, you could have broken it to us a bit more gently than that.
Sorry, Joe.
He's what?
And Beethoven's not feeling too well either. You know, so, you know, there's this thing, this button you can use to turn off. You don't have to listen. You don't have to play the game. You can do something else. And you can do something positive, not just, you know, stick your head in the sand. There is stuff you can do. There are causes you can get involved in. There is places you can donate your money. You can make a difference. And I think that in these times of, and it's not just what's been happening last week. We've been through it in our country. You know, this is all in times of, you know, this ridiculous sort of populism and darkness. Mm. Well, you can be different. You can live differently, I think. You can choose joy, you can choose hope, you can choose laughter.
That was Reverend Dr. Nick Page with Thought for the Day.
That's brilliant. There.
No, but it was we need those kind of loud voices, not the hate or other voices. So thank you.
Believe me, I can get sucked into it. And a few years ago, I was absolutely in the vortex of tweeting and thinking that people were hanging, and they weren't paying any attention to me anyway. You know, all you're doing is adding another minor irritation point to somebody's day.
This is the truth about social media companies. Their algorithms are all set for extreme views.
Absolutely.
They want
Absolutely.
You to react. They want you to be angry or overjoyed and nothing in between. And that's good for them. And we are so complicit in that. So we just get sucked into that silly game of theirs by reacting. Mm. And step back, don't react, choose joy and kindness. I just want to add to the, I mean, you hinted at that, you know, just go buy a coffee for someone.
Yeah, maybe William the Conqueror.
Yeah, exactly. He's very thirsty.
He might need one.
The person behind you in the queue, just buy them a coffee, you know. And I do think, actually, when we engage in these sort of random acts of kindness, we benefit more than the person receiving the kindness, because it changes us and it makes us feel more hopeful. So if you are feeling a bit lousy from this week, really encourage you to, you know, follow the way of Jesus. Do something good for someone. Do the next good thing.
And I'd love to hear your ideas of what you can do. I mean, for example, in Oxford, there's a cafe that's run. It's a kind of social enterprise, but you can you can pay for your meal and you can then buy your meals for other people. You can pay more. And, you know, it always annoys me when I go, because I think Claire buys far too many meals for other people. But anyway, you know, that's what she's like. I'd have brought it down a bit. But, you know, no, it's great. So you can do that. And again, a place like that to go to where you can, you know, what you're going to do is making a difference. To be intentional about it is fantastic. So if you've got ideas to share, that would be great to hear from you. That'd be really
good. Yeah. How are you going to spread a bit of joy or a bit of kindness? Write into joe@midfaithcrisis.org. We'll tell you our ones. What are you going to do, Nick? I don't know.
I've just told you what I'd do. I can't think of anything else now. Anyway, listen, we should wrap this up. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you especially to everyone who wrote in. That's really fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And we're coming back with more great stuff next week, believe me.
Yeah. We couldn't fit them all in this week. So that's great. Thank you to those who support the podcast.
Yes.
That's a lovely act of kindness as well. And we really appreciate that.
We really do. And if you're one of those people who've been thinking, I must give those guys a cup of coffee sometime, then why don't you go to our website now, midfaithcrisis.org. You can give there. That'd be great. Thank you.
Yes. So we're always very grateful for that. And for those people who recommend the podcast, that's a lovely thing to do as well.
Right. Yeah. Come on. Let's go spread some joy. Let's do it.
Okay. Great. All right. Well, we'll be back with you next week. Joyful and full of hope, no doubt.
As ever.